we were holding on some days on the outlet, first line of the widest line, middle line. Okay, you mentioned that, so on Mishnah had mentioned that you have various categories of korbanos. Some of them require hagosha, which is to touch it to the corner of the mizbeach, but not tnufa, which is waving it in all directions. Some require tnufa, but not hagosha. A couple of them, the korban omer and mincha b'tzolta require both tnufa and hagosha, and then you have mincha tnesachim doesn't require either one. So we've been talking about the tnufa of the waving of the shtei alechem together with the shnei kvasim. We had a machlokes, what order are they placed? You have the kvasim and then the bread on top. You have the bread and then the kvasim on top. You have the bread sandwiched in between. You have them next to each other. The shtei alechem. It's two loaves of bread. Later on, in the Sadis, in about a month from now, as the shem, we're going to get to, the Mishnah is going to describe what they look like. The size of them, Okay. So, turn it up on them. Zivchei shalmei tzibur, these shlomim of the tzibur that are brought on shiburis, turn into tnufa la'acha shchita. They have to be waved after they're shechted. So before we were talking about, previously we were talking about that they have to be waved while they're still alive. So you take them and the shalach, and then you put them on the hands of the kohen, and you wave them in all six directions while they're alive. They're kvasim, they're sheep within their first year. So
they're, when they're alive and after they're
dead. Right, so that's the thing. Right, we mentioned in the Mishnah actually that Reb Shimon had said there's three korbanos that have, each of them have two out of three avodas, and among them are, the shlomim of the tzibur were saying need tnufa while they're alive and also tnufa after their shechting.
While they're
alive. So that's what we had before, the machlokes, whether they go on top of the sheep or the sheep go on top of them. You also have, actually, when it comes to the tnufa after they're shechted, so here the Gemara is going to discuss what parts of the sheep are waved after they're shechted, you have a further machlokes among the Rishonim, or is the bread waved with it at the same time as well, after in that second tnufa. Okay. Anyway, so t'unim tnufa la'acha shechita, they have to be waved after they're shechted, and utnufasim k'mos shehein divrei Rebbe. And Rebbe says they're waved as they are, meaning the same way as you wave them as whole animals while they were alive, obviously, because nothing was taken out of them yet. The same way, they're waved in the same way while they're still whole, before they're cut apart and whatever, after they're shechted. That's what Rebbe says. Now, according to him, in other words, the order is you wave the kvasim together with the lechem while they're alive, then you shech the kvasim, then before you do anything else with the kvasim, you wave them again, with or without the lechem, depending on that, machalitis, but whatever, and then you go ahead with the rest of the process of skinning them and cutting them up.
Why?
Because the pasuk says, that you wave them, and we're going to talk about it on Amud Beis, how we know. Yeah, okay, so we're going to see, rather, what the deeper reason is, I don't know, but that's how the pasuk says. Okay. So that's what Rebbe says, that you wave them still while they're still whole. But Chum and Bechaz of the Shoyt. So Chum say no. All you wave the second time around is Bechaz of the Shoyt, the chest and the thigh of it, same as you would with any regular shlomim. These are not a regular shlomim. These are the shlomim of the tzibur, and they have different dinim, but as far as this is concerned, the Chum hold it has the same din. You wave only Bechaz of the Shoyt the second time. So the question is, what is the underlying machlokes? Omelet of Chista, Lord of Hamnuna, the Amri Lord of Hamnuna, Lord of Chista, Lord of Chista says to Lord of Hamnuna, or some say Lord of Hamnuna says to Lord of Chista. We had that yesterday also, by the way, we had it earlier on the Amud. There's more than one Lord of Hamnuna in Shas. So it could be that the Gemara is arguing over here which Lord of Hamnuna was involved in the conversation, the one who was older than Lord of Chista, and therefore was telling him, or the one who was a Talmud of Lord of Chista, and therefore Lord of Chista has to tell him. Anyway, the Machloikas is, Vidun Mino Umina, the dun mina v'uki ba'asra kamisvi. The machlokes between Rebbe and Machachamim is when we learn something by a gzeira shava, when we learn it over here as we do by binyan av, then
dun mina
means we learn from it and we learn from it again. We're talking about binyan av. We've had this concept before. We had it in Zvachim, for example. We had it in other places. Like this, when you have two things that are compared through a binyan av or a hekesh or what have you, is the idea that you're only comparing them as far as the one thing that it says in the pasuk, but everything else you leave the original thing as it was. That's called dun mina v'uki ba'asra, which is the second possibility over here. You learn from it, but then you leave everything else of the one that you're learning to, you leave it as it is. So in other words, you open
from one to the
other. Okay, so let's start with Dun Mi No Mi No. Dun Mi No Mi No would mean you're learning from, we're learning from the Shlomim of Yachid to the Shlomim of the Sefer. And then Dun Mi No Mi No would mean that we learn the basic concept that you need Tanufa, and then we after it checks it, and then we continue to learn from that, we continue to apply details from the one to the other. Shlomim of Yachid, or your wave after it's checked is the call of the trait. Dun Mi No Mi No would mean we're learning not only the basic concept of Tanufa, but also what exactly you do the Tanufa with, namely the call of the trait.
So you start with the detail, which you pass from one to another.
That's right. And then you continue to apply details. Right, that's called Dun Mi No Mi No. Dun Mi No Uki Ba'astra would mean we learn the one thing from one to the other, in this case that you need Tanufa, but then like we close the pipeline and everything else remains the same in the destination, everything else remains the same as it was.
So how do you decide when you, if you
so you have a machlokas, so that's the thing. Rav Hamnuna or Rav Chisda is saying that here you have a machlokas, which one, you have the machlokas between Rebbe and the Chachamim is, which one are we doing? Rabbanan Sabri Dun Mi No Mi No. So like this, the Rabbanan hold, you do Dun Mi No Mi No. You start with one thing that you learn from one to the other, and then you continue to learn other details from one to the other. Name it.
Every time we have a Dun Mi No, there's a machlokas.
Yeah, pretty much. Ma'az Divchei Shalme Yochet. Yeah, and in fact, we've had that in a number of places in Shas. Here in the Sarah Shas, it just says, it's mentioned first in Yuvamus, and then from there, there's other references in the Gemara where exactly you find
the
concept. I don't know if every single one, but you have a lot of them. You have the original place that comes up in Yevamos is as far as the issue of when we say that a mystery or a journey is not allowed to marry into the Jewish people, and Rav Shimon says that the women of them are, because we're learning from, because he says we learn from Moriah and Ammon, so that would be an example of Dun Mi No Mi No, Dun Mi No Vo Ki Ba'astra. So in other words, the Pasuk mentions four nations over there that can't marry in to the Jewish people. Two of them we know halacha Moshe Mitzinai is only the men and not the women. The other two the Pasuk doesn't specify. So he says, or actually it's not actually about the nations. Actually, it's as far as mamzerim. That's again, do you say that a mamzer is zocha or an akever is osur, or do you say that maybe only zchorim. And that maybe only Zchorim and the Kaver, that maybe only Zchorim are also in the Kaver side. Anyway, the Gemara, on the side over there of the Gemara, you have about a dozen places where this comes up in Shas. This is one of the references. Yeah, we had it in Zvachim, it comes up in a number of places. Okay. Anyway. So, Rabbanan Sabri Dun Mi No Mi No. So, Rabbanan hold, you not only learn the one thing from the other with a limud, you learn not only the one detail, you continue to learn details. Ma zivchei shalme yochid tunim tnufa la'acha shchita. Just like the shlomim offered by a yochid have to be waived after their shechita, after zivchei shalme tzibur tunim tnufa la'acha shchita. So it is also with the shlomim brought by the tzibur. That's the dun mi no, that we're learning one from the other. U mi no, and then we continue to apply details. Ma hasim b'chaz of a shoik, by a shlomim of a yochid, what are you waiving? Only the chaz of the shoik, not the whole animal. Achachanami, the chaz of the shoik. The same thing that Chachamim say here, evidently, what you have to wave after shchita is the chaz of the shoik. So the Chachamim are saying like this, that you have to wave the kvasim together with the lechem while they're alive, that we know from the pasuk, because it says, the heinif hakoin oisam al lechem abikurim tinuchal lifnei Hashem, and so that's where we learn tinuchal mechai. Now we're saying, though, that the Chachamim are saying, in addition, you also have, they have to be treated like a regular shlomim, in the sense that they have to be waived also after they're shechted. But there, all you have to waive is the chaz of the shoik, same as any other shlomim.
What's the logic of deriving something from the yachid to the tzibur? I mean, so many times we...
Okay, if we have a source...
We make some differences and saying this is... For the tzibur, this is
okay, if we have a source to say that they're different, then fine. But otherwise, they are both shlomim after all, and therefore they should have, and therefore they should have certain similarities. Okay, but the Gemara is assuming that they should have similarities, unless we know otherwise. We know that there are distinctions between them. We know, for example, that the shlomim, for example, we discussed in Zvachim that the shlomim and the tzibur are actually kodshim as opposed to regular shlomim, a kodshim kalim. Fine, obviously there are a lot of differences between them, but in general, we should assume if both Rebbe and the Chachamim are assuming that they are the same after all. They're both saying that ultimately the Pasuk doesn't explicitly say that they need Tzinur Chalach HaShchita. We're learning that only from the fact that they're like Ishlam. The only machlokas is, to what degree are we comparing them? So the Rabbanon say that we're learning the basic concept of Tzinurcha, and then in addition, we're also learning what you do Tzinurcha with, namely only the Chaz V'Shem. They're Rebbe Sabar.
So that's Dun Mino.
That's we're learning the one thing, and we're continuing to learn more details about what we're learning. Rebbe holds, no, what you do is you learn the basic concept, but then everything else, you leave all the details by the destination the way they were originally. So let's start. So fine, I agree with you, Chachamim, just like the Shlom and Yachid require Tznufa after their Shechter, but he says, okay, ba'asra. Then at that point, once we learn that basic thing, we close the window there. Everything else by the Ziv Chayshamah Tzibur stays in its original state, namely, Hasim who the cause of a shirk. So we leave everything else as is. Over there, by the Shlomim of the Yachid, yes, it's only the cause of a shirk, Aval Hafa, but over here, Kamos Shehain, they should be as they were the kind of shlomim that they were up until this point, meaning kamos shein b'chayim. How were they waved when they were alive? These shalmei tzibur, the whole thing was waved, not just the chaz v'shoyim. So therefore says Rebbe, the same thing should be true after they're shechted. Yes, we're going to learn from shlomim of yachid that we're going to wave them after they're shechted, which otherwise we wouldn't even have a pasuk to tell us. However, we're not going to extend it so far as to say they should be exactly like the Shalma Yachid. Their tznufa is going to be like the previous tznufa of them, meaning that they're still whole. Yeah. Okay, so all of that is one way of explaining the machloikus of Rebbe and the Chachamim. It's based on the concept. When we learn one thing from another, how much of it are we learning? What are we leaving in place and what are we changing? Second explanation, Rav Papa Amar, Dekula Alma Dun Mino Minahu. No, both Rebbe and the Chachamim, the second explanation, right? We have Rav Hamnuna or Rav Chisda giving the first explanation. Now we have Rav Papa giving a second explanation. Dekula Alma Dun Mino Minahu. No, everybody would agree that when you're learning one carbon from another, you're learning everything. So you're learning the concept that you need Tznufa. You're learning the concept that you need tznufa, and you're also learning what you wave. However, so in that case, why is Rebbe saying you wave the whole thing? Because there's a difference. When it comes to a shlomim of a yachid, what goes to the kohen? Only the chaz of the shayt. When it comes to the shlomim of the sibur, what goes to the kohenim? All of it. Because it's kodesh kodeshim.
That's for sure. That's all.
Everybody agrees with that. Yeah, that's
for Cohen, just because of shirk.
From shlomim of a yachid, but from shlomim of tzibur, namely these shlomim of shavuot, yeah, the whole thing goes to the kohen. So therefore, behind the time of the Rebbe, so why is Rebbe saying in this case that you wave the whole animal? Because yes, he holds them, because exactly that. You chachamim want to compare it to the shlomim of the yachid. I am comparing it to the shlomim of the yachid. Ma hotam davash matan lekohen. What are you waving over there? You're waving the parts that are given as a present to the kohenim, the chaz of the sheik. Afalcha davash matan lekohen. The same thing. You're waving here whatever is given to the kohen. It happens that over here, the whole thing is being given to the kohen. So not I disagree with you and I say we only learn one detail and we leave everything else. I'm learning all the details, but the details of the Shalmei Tzibur are different than the details of the Shalmei Yachid as far as what's given to the kohen. By the way, Tosfos points out we had one of the places where we had this concept of Dun Mino Mina or Dun Mino Uki Ba'asra had what we had in Zachim regarding a case over there where a person gives an adava of oil. What exactly do you do with it? Do you burn it? Do you pour it or whatever? We also discussed over there this question of Dun Mino Mina or Dun Mino Uki Ba'asra. Here, Rav Papa is taking the view that everybody agrees Dun Mino Mina. There in the Gemara, actually, Rav Papa first starts saying that way also, but then they bring a braisa that contradicts him, and so he says, you're right, I have to concede this to the braisa that they are, in fact, arguing on Dun Mino Mina. That's in Zvachim. In Zvachim we had it. So Tosfos says, this that Rav Papa is saying over here, everybody agrees Dun Mino Mina, is not Rav Papa's last word on the subject. Later on, after the Sugya and Zvachim, he would have changed his mind and agreed with Rav Hamnuna and Rav Chisda about the source of the Machlokes of Rebbe and Rav Papa.
Like the first version.
Like the first version, right. Yeah.
So the halacha is...
Well, we haven't gotten to halacha yet. Wait, I mean, as far as halacha, Rebbe versus the Chachamim, the usual rule is halacha ke Rebbe mechavei roi v'loi mechavei ro. When Rebbe argues that the Chachamim, plural, then the halacha is generally like that. As opposed to when he argues as an individual Tana, like we had yesterday, and where he argues about how the about what goes on top and what goes on bottom, then the halacha will be like him. So over here, the halacha is like a Chachamim. Here, what we're trying to figure out is what's the underlying mechanism over here, what's the underlying argument between them. So we have, again, Rav Hamnuna and Rav Chista's understanding that they're arguing about the mechanism of how a Gzeira Shava or a Hekesh or what have you works. And you have Rav Papa's explanation that nothing to do with that. It's just practically speaking, the Korban has different, the details of what's given to the Korban are different in the two cases. Then we have a third explanation. Ravina Amar, Gikula Alma Dunmina V'Uki Basra, the opposite of Rapapa. Now, everybody would agree that when you're learning something by a Hekesh like that, or by Mama Sina like that, you're learning only the you're learning only the particular detail, namely in this case that you need Tnufa after it's shested. So, behind the time of the so the Zebi, we understand then why he says that you wave, that you wave the whole thing, because the Shami Sibra will wave, the whole thing was waved while it's alive, therefore it should also be waved the same way after it was shechted. But what about the Rabbanon? Behind the time of the Rabbanon, why do the Rabbanon say not, that only the Chazar Sheik? Because they say, Shamehem Ribuyahu. Like this, when the Pasuk introduces the concept of giving the Chazar Sheik to the Kohen, and that you have to wave them first, it says that Hashem says, I took the Chazar and the Sheik, from the Korbanos, from the Shlomim, and from Shalmehem, from their Shlomim, and I gave them to Aaron. So therefore, it's the Chachamim are learning, from the word Shalmehem, their Shlomim, that it's a ribui, meaning all types of Shlomim. Whether it's the individual Shlomim, whether it's the Sibur's Shlomim, either way, the Chaz of the Church is all that's being waived.
Shalmehem seems to be a mute.
No, Shalmehem means their Shlomim, meaning in general, all Shlomim. Regardless right. Whether they're brought by the Yochid or whether they're brought by the Sibur. Either way, Mizivchei Shal Mehem, as Hashem says, I've taken the Chaza and the Shoik and given them that they should be waived and then they should be given. Them means they're the people whenever they bring Shlomim. But it means both the Shlomim brought by individual Jews and the Shlomim brought by the Sibur on Shavuos. So therefore, the Chachamim would say, really, you're right, Rebbe. We should, if it weren't for that Pasuk, you're right. We would have to say that you waived the whole thing. However, since here the Pasuk says Shalmehem, that means only the Chaz of the Shoik are waived from all Shlom. It's interesting, by the way, the Sefer HaKrisus, which is a Sefer from one of the Rishonim about the Rabbeinu Shimshon Mekinon, I think is his name is, Sefer HaKrisus is a Sefer that deals with the rules of how Limudim work in the Gemara. When the Gemara does a Limud, when the Gemara does a Kal V'Chomer of Zera Shava, or any of the other Yud Gimel Middos, or whatever, how exactly do these things work? So he says, in our case over here, you have Ravina saying that everybody agrees, Dun Minav Ukibas, so that you only learn the one detail, but everything else you leave as it was. But Sefer HaKrisus says, Ravina being the last, being the latest Amurda to discuss this, because you have Rav Hamnuna and Rav Chista, and Rav Papa are all earlier than him, that implies the halacha must be like him. Therefore, in general, in Shas, when we have a question like this, like Dun Mina Mina or Dun Mina Oki Bastra, we should have to say that that's how it is. We go according to what Ravina says, because he's the latest opinion over here. On the other hand, in general, the rule is halacha kibastroi. In general, the rule is from Abaya and Rava and on, the halacha is like a later authority within its corpus. Now, you can't have, for example, we know that the Gaonim can't argue with the Gemara, and we know that the Achronim can't argue with the Rishonim. But within its corpus, we usually go according to the later opinion, beginning from Abaya and Rava and on, because after that, we say the later opinion knew what the earlier one said, and he still decides to disagree with it. So therefore, yeah. On the other hand, as opposed to another tchukha, that's different. Yeah. Well, it's not that they didn't know, it's that they're on a lower level already, and therefore they can't argue. Yeah. Okay. With that said, you have other Mephoshim who disagree with the Sefer HaKrisus on that. They say that, no, it's a case-by-case basis. Sometimes you do one, sometimes you do the other. Ravina is saying, over here, that's how it is, doesn't mean that it establishes a general rule for all of Shas. Okay, then we said in the Mishnah, Rav Shimon Omer, Shloshim Minim Ch'unim Sholosh Mitzvot, we said that Rav Shimon says you have among three Korbanos and among three Avodas, you have kind of like a Venn diagram over here, one of these diagrams, you know, we have a couple of overlapping circles, and where you have the different things go into detail. What?
They get bigger and bigger?
No, not they get bigger and bigger, but like you have you'll have one circle for a second one that partially overlaps that, a third one that overlaps the other two, and then you have like this and this combined together to make this, et cetera. So Rav Shimon says you have three korbanos and you have three avodas, but each korban only has two, each of the three korbanos only has two out of the three things. Namely, Rav Shimon had said, the shtayim b'cholach, or the shlishis ein b'hen, each of these korbanos has two out of three and is missing the third. The Elohein, and these are as follows. It's unusual that the Gemara is quoting the whole long thing from the Mishnah when we could just look at it ourselves, and in fact, Shuchim HaKubetzis takes it all out. I guess the Kisvei Yad that they printed the Gemara from, though, I guess they kept it, and I guess they wrote it in those Kisvei Yad because it's hard to keep track otherwise. Okay. Anyway, what are they? The Elohim, the three korbanos are Zivchei Shamei Yochid, the Shlomim offered by a Yochid, the Zivchei Shamei Tzivur, and the Shlomim offered by the Tzivur and Shluritz, the Oshem Mesorah, and the Oshem brought by Mesorah when he becomes Sochar. And the three Avodas that we're dealing with, so those are the three korbanos that we're dealing with, where each one has two out of the three. The three Avodas are, they're not really Avodas, but whatever, the three procedures are Smicha, leaning on the animal, doing tznufa while the animal is alive, and doing tznufa after the animal is chested. So we're saying, Rav Shimon is saying in the Mishnah, that of these three korbanos, each one of them has only two of the three. None of them have all three, and none of them share exactly the same set. Namely, Zivchei Shalmei Yochid Tz'unim Smicha Chaim, or tznufa Shotin, the Shlomim brought by a Yochid, you have to do smicha on them, the owner does smicha on it while the animal is alive. And, as we said before, you do tznufa with the chaz of a shkoik of it, after it's chested. The ein behem tznufa chayim, the shlomim v'yachid, there's no waving done while the animal is alive. That's part number one. Part number two, zivchei shami tzibur tonin tznufa chayim v'shkotin, the shlomim brought by the tzibur, I'm sure, need to be waved, as we said, twice, when they're alive and after they're chested. The ein behem smicha, but there's no smicha done on the animal while it's alive. And Asher Masoda, Tohen Smicho, Tznufa Chai, the Asher Masoda, you have to do Smicha on it, the Masoda does Smicha on it, it has to be waved while it's alive, the aim by Tznufa Shachot, but there's no Tznufa with it after it's chested. So those are the three Karbonis, and those are the three procedures where each one was saying has only two out of the three.
The part of Yom Kippur, where you have Smicha when he's alive.
Yeah, but you don't have any of the other two. You don't have Tznufa Mechai, you don't have Tznufa Lachashikha. You have many korbanos where you have smicha. Anytime a person brings an ola, for example, they do smicha on it, but there's no smicha when it's alive or when it's dead. So Rav Shimon's not mentioning that. Rav Shimon wants to give us a handy way of remembering with these three korbanos and these three procedures. So yeah. Okay, so now what we're going to do is the Gemara is going to analyze that and see, Taka, why should each of these korbanos not have the third one? Where, Taka, do we know that each one has only two of them? So let's start out. The year Zivchei Shalmei Yochid Tzunin Tznufa Chayim. We should say then that maybe the Shlomim offered by a Yochid do need to be waived while they're alive. Mikavachomer, and we should be able to derive that from a Kavachomer. Uma Zivchei Shalmei Tzibur She'ena Tzunin Tznufa Chayim. Madach the Shlomim of Shavuos. You don't have to do smicha on them at all, and yet Tzunin Tznufa Chayim, but you have to do tznufa on them where they're alive. So obviously tznufa is more of a requirement than smicha, because there you have an example of a korban where you don't need smicha when the animal's alive, but you do need tznufa. Zivchei Shalmei Yochid Tzunin Tznufa Chayim. So then the shlomim offered by the yochid, where you have to do smicha when they're alive, ain't a din Tzunin Tznufa Chayim. Shouldn't it be a kavachomer that they have to do tznufa while the animal is alive also? So why is Rav Shimon saying that it doesn't, that it only needs smicha when it's alive and tznufa after it's chested? Maybe it should need tznufa while it's alive also. And in fact, Tosfos points out, by the way, that the premise of the question is, again, we just said that the word shalmehem means to include all the shlomim under one umbrella. So once we have a procedure that we know that applies to one shlomim, maybe it should apply to all of them.
And he doesn't.
Yeah, so Taka, why not? The reason is, miyat rachmona gabi zivchei shalmei tzibur oisam. True, but when it comes to the shlomim of the tzibur, we have a word in the pasuk oisam. V'heinef ha-kohen oisam. The kohen should wave them. And that's, yeah. oisam lamoche zivchei shama yachid. So therefore, that word oisam comes to exclude the shlamim of the yachid. We do have certain similarities between them, namely that they both need tenufa after the animal is shechted. But to go to go further and say that it should need tenufa mechayim, no. For that, we have the word oisam that knocks that out. Okay. Next. The year is divchei shamet simul. So there's no tenufa for a shlamim of a yachid while it's alive. Only after it's shechted, you take the chaz of a shechted. Okay. Next, possibility number two. The year is divchei shamet simul to unim smicha mikav chaymer. Let's argue just the opposite. Let's argue that the shlamim of the simul do require smicha while they're alive. And again, let's make a kav chaymer to that effect. The shlomim of the yachid we just established don't need smicha when they're alive. Yet to unin smicha they require smicha. So in that case, then smicha sounds like there's more is a broader thing than smicha because you have a carbon there that doesn't of a yachid that doesn't require smicha when it's alive but requires smicha. Zivchei shamei tzibur she to unin smicha chayim. So then the shlomim of tzibur which have to be waived when they're alive, and that we know because the pasuk says v'heinif hakarin oisam. Then they shouldn't it be a kavah chomer that they also require smicha? And then we would say that they require all three.
If the yachid does,
how much more so the tzibur is sure, right? The answer is Amar Ravina says, okay, the reason why that doesn't work is because gmiri, we have the Kabbalah, the concept shtei smichas the tzibur. There are only two karbonis that belong to the tzibur on which smicha is done. Namely, you have the par helam gavashal sibur, where we, as we learned in Horius, that the Sanhedrin makes a mistake in halacha, and the sibur needs to bring a par of the carbon. And the pasuk says there was some chuziknei aida, that the Sanhedrin, acting as representatives of the people, drew smicha on the animal. And you have, the other one is the third amishaleach, which, okay, isn't a carbon per se, but still, the third lazazel. Also, the pasuk says that Aaron should do smicha on his head and then send it off. Those are the only two. Now, you're going to ask, of course, the power of Yom Kippur. The answer is the power of Yom Kippur is not a carbon of the Sibur. Fundamentally, it belongs to the Kohen Gadol. It's brought from the Kohen Gadol's own personal fund. But, it's required for Yom Kippur. It's one of the carbonics required for Yom Kippur. However, the fact is, it only belongs to the Kohen Gadol. No. The power is not on behalf of the whole Sibur. In fact, we learned at the beginning of Shavuot that it's actually only on behalf of himself and the other Kohen. And we discussed the concept that really it's a mikufya, it's sort of like this kapara floating around in the air, and therefore they're able to join in it. It doesn't really belong to the kohenim themselves. It really belongs fundamentally only to the kohen gadol. So that's not a korban sibur. But among korbanos sibur, the only two are the par helam gavur and the third amishalei.
Is there a stipulation in sibur that regards the kohen gadol?
Yeah, when he brings his power the first time, we do an avodah of Yom Kippur, right? The first time he says, "On Hashem Patosi Avisi Pashai Ulani Ubeisi," him and his immediate family. The second time is Ani Ubeisi Ubnei Aaron Amtisha, myself and all the Kohenim. And then the third one is not on that power at all. By that time, that power is over and done with. By the time he gets to the third vidui, is the third lazozel, and that goes for the whole Jewish people. Those are the only two that korbanos that are brought from the Sibur's funds that are brought by the Sibur where smicha is done. So if you were to say that smicha is done on these kvasim, on these shlamei Sibur of Shavuot, then that would contradict that rule. You'd have three smichas to Sibur. Therefore, automatically that knocks that out. It's halacha l'moshe mishnah, basically. Okay. Next. The Yehei Oshem Mitzvah Tone Tnufa Shochet Mikav HaChomer. Now let's turn to the Oshem Mitzvah and argue that we said in the Mishnah that it requires smicha and it also requires Tnufa when it's alive. Why shouldn't it require Tnufa after it's shechted? Again, let's make a Kav HaChomer. Ma Zivchei Shalmei Yochid Shein Tunin Tnufa Chayim, the Madach, the Shlomim of the Yochid, which we've established don't have Tnufa done to them when they're alive. Tun and Tnufa Shchutin. Yes, they require Tnufa after they're shechted. Oshem Mitzvah Shtoin Tnufa Chai. So then, if the Oshem Mitzvah has to be waived when it's alive, Ain't a Din Shtoin Tnufa Shachud. How much more so we should argue that it requires Tnufa after it's shechted?
Like a Yachid.
By a Kavachimah, from a Shlomim, from a Yachid, right. And by the way, you have Mephoshim point out, that on the face of it, the Gemara could have asked just as well. Instead of learning from the Shlomim, the Gemara could have learned from the Shalmei Tzibur. We just said that the Shalmei Tzibur also require two wavings, one when they're alive and one... Well, we would argue... No, but the, okay, but one of the answers is actually the whole concept of doing snufa, the whole concept of doing snufa after it's shechted, we're saying we're learning from the Shlomim of the Yachid. So rather than act, let's learn it from the Shalmei Tzibur, which in turn themselves are learned from the Shalmei Yachid, we might as well go back to the source and ask that let's have a, make a kavachomer from Shalmei Yachid.
That's what we're doing.
That's the point. That's why we're doing it. That's why we're not trying to do a kavachomer from the Shalmei Tzibur, because the Shalmei Tzibur themselves, we only know from the Shalmei Yachid. Okay. Anyway, it's a pack of wine. Huh? The reason is, Miyesh Rachmanav, Gabi Zivche Shalmei Yachid, Oysai. Okay, but you have another word, just like we had Oysam by the Shalmei Tzibur, we also have the word Oysai by the Shalmei Yachid, namely the Pasuk says, Lahonis Oysai, Tznufa L'Snashem, to wave it. So that means, it says, Oysai, the Ma'ote, Oshem Mesoda, that comes to exclude the Oshem of the Mesoda, that it doesn't require Tznufa after it's shechted.
Maybe it doesn't mean before.
No, because the Pasuk says that, the Pasuk says that you have to wave it. The Pasuk, yes. So therefore, it does say that the Oshem requires Tznufa, so that they have to be waved, we know that. But based on this meal from the Shlomim, that's only when it's alive, not after it's shechted.
There's no one listener that indicates that for sure when it's alive you have to have it. The only question is you have to have it after, because one that you do the first one.
Well, what we're saying is, right.
And all of them get, no matter what, all of them get
snufa. All of them get some kind of snufa, right. But the difference is that with the Shlomim, the Pasuk mentions snufa involving the Chol to the Shalik specifically. When it comes to the Shalmei Tzibur and when it comes to the Oshem, the Pasuk doesn't mention any specific parts that get snufa. Therefore, that means that the snufa is done while they're alive. Therefore it means that snufa is done while they're alive, while they're still complete. Okay, well, that was ready before. That's still talking about after they're shechted. But no, it's also because the order of things. First it mentions snufa, and then it mentions shechting. Okay. So that covers then how Reb Shimon knows what he said in the Mishnah, that each of these three korbanos, you only have two out of the three procedures and not the third.
And that's accepted by...
Everybody accepts that, yeah. I mean, Reb Shimon is the one mentioning it in the Mishnah, but nobody disagrees with it. So that's how it is, yeah. Okay. With that said, I mean, there is one minor detail in that, which is that actually when we're saying over here that an Oshem Mesoda requires smicha, we actually had a discussion in the Zvachim, we had an opinion over there in a Gemara that said that actually there was an opinion that said that Midaraisa it actually doesn't require smicha, because we discussed the whole issue over there, how could the Mesoda kind of sort of stick his hands into the Azorah to do smicha on it. So we had an opinion over there that it doesn't actually require level, obviously, because of the issue of where is the Masurda going to stand and where is the animal going to stand in order to be able to do it. Yeah.
He can't go into the
Azara, and also there was the idea, take it with smicha shechita, that the smicha is supposed to be done as close as possible to the place where the animal is shechted. If you say that it has to be shechted, and what we discussed over there actually is like this. We had a three-way machlokas. When we say that an osham, like all kodshim has to be shechted in the north, what is the definition of north? Does it mean exactly due north of the Mizbeach? If this is the Azara over here, and this is the Mizbeach, do we mean only exactly north of the Mizbeach, not here and not here? Or does it mean also here, closer to the Hekel? Or does it mean also here, closer to the Ezrus Yisrael? Only if we say that it includes this area can the Mesoda do smicha, and otherwise, how are you going to do it? If it's shechted over here, you can't do smicha over here and then walk it over. It's supposed to be taken for smicha shchita. You're supposed to do them immediately.
You should be
doing it immediately after. Which, by the way, since we're talking about that, there's a concept also, another example of taken is that take it when the tefillah yadayim in bracha, right after you, as soon as possible after you wash your hands, you're supposed to say the bracha hamotzi, which is why it's brought in Shulchan Aruch that you shouldn't have more than the time it takes to walk 22 amos between them, because that's 22 amos is the distance from Shaul Nikana, where the Masorah is standing, until the edge of the Mizbeach.
Oh, it's 22 amos, do you call that take
it? That's the point, that's within that time. I never heard of that. Interesting. Okay.
take their position, the same letters as kosif, which means the shoulder. Interesting.
Huh. Okay. Okay. All right, so let's continue with the Gemara. So now, Misha Sheviu Korban Echad. Suppose you have five people, five, as often the Gemara uses, as just an indefinite number. It doesn't have to mean five, it just means a bunch of people that brought one korban, and we just established that the shlomim requires tznufa. So who does the tznufa? You're not going to have all of them do it together. Echad meinif ayidei kolam. One person does the tznufa on behalf of all of them. Now, we discussed before the idea, in the Mishnah, when we mentioned how tznufa is done, that we said the kohen puts his hand under the hands of the owner, we had that, we said that Rashi later in the Masechta talks about that it means exactly that. The owner holds the things, and the kohen puts his hands directly under the owner's, and together they wave it. Tosfos objected in the Mishnah that doesn't work, then tachtisa. So Tosfos learns it means the owner holds it up here, and the kohen holds it down here. But here, when you have five people, it's the same kind of issue. Even if you're going to argue that each person is holding a different part, realistically, you're going to have, they're going to bump into each other or whatever. So therefore, you don't do that. You just have one person do it together with the kohen. But Isha, what about when a woman brings a korban? And we said in the Mishnah that women don't do tznufa with their korbanet. Kohen meinafal yavah. So the kohen does the tznufa on her behalf. The same thing if somebody sends a korban from overseas, and therefore he's not there available to do the tznufa. Kohen meinafal yavah. The same thing the kohen does the tznufa on his behalf.
We saw that.
Well, we didn't mention it. We didn't mention in the Mishnah. No, we meant the only one we mentioned in the Mishnah. We said if a woman brings a korban, well, the soita does do tznufa. That's true. The soita does do the tznufa of her mincha together with the korban. But no, ordinarily when a woman brings a korban, then there's no that she doesn't do the tznufa. Or the Mishnah mentioned also if a goy sends a korban, according to the opinions that a goy can offer a shlomim, which we'll talk about in a week and a half, Bez Hashem, then again he doesn't do the tznufa. The korban just does it for him. But Tosfos actually gets into an interesting discussion over here about the question that you have a Gemara elsewhere, you have a Gemara in Gittin that talks about that when a person sends a korban from overseas, now on the face of it, smicha has to be done on the korban, but he's not there to do smicha, so how do you do it? And the Gemara says, you're right, it would only work if it was a korban sent by a woman because they don't do smicha. Over here, the Gemara doesn't seem to be taking that into consideration. The Gemara is just saying, if somebody sends his korban from Medina Sayyam, then it's okay, the kohen can do the tznufa for him. What's the difference? Why don't we say that since the owner is not there to do the tznufa, then you have a problem. So Tosfos gets into a long discussion about all the pros and cons of it. Among the answers are that it's one thing, that's one, the Gemara there is talking about a chatas or an asham. There, the smicha is a more critical thing, because when you do the smicha on a chatas or an asham, you're supposed to be doing vidui of the avera for which the person is bringing a chatas or an asham for a particular avera. He's supposed to be saying vidui. So there, we're insisting that smicha has to be done. Here, we're talking about tshnufa, the shlomim. You're not saying anything specific. There's no vidui involved. That's not in choice, actually. That's a different explanation from one of the other mafarshim. But yeah, it's one thing, the smicha over there, where the person has to do vidui. It's another thing over here, the snufa, or the smicha of a shlomim, for that matter, that I'm on right, that when a person does smicha on a shlomim instead of vidui, because there's no vidui in connection with a shlomim, instead he says praises to Hashem. So that is not so important if the person's not there to read that. So that is that. Okay, Mishnah says, if somebody says, I am making a neder to bring, now we discussed all the way from the beginning of the Masechta that there are two types, there's five types of mincha, there's five types of mincha that a yachid can bring. One of them is just raw flour with oil and lavoina sprinkled on top. The other four are various kinds of baked and fried ones. So we're going to start talking about those. We have two types of fried ones called minchas machvas and minchas macheshet, which we're going to discuss in the Mishnah and the Gemara what the difference between them is. And then you have two types of baked mincha. You have one baked, you have chalos and you have rikikin. One explanation of the difference between chalos and rikikin is a chalos has fixed. They're all matzah. Yeah, none of them are allowed to be chametz. We learned that earlier in the perek. But one way of looking at it is that chalos are thicker and rikikin are thinner, like our masses. Another way of looking at it, the minchas chinuch wants to say, is that they're both the same thickness, but the difference is the chalos are kneaded with oil and the rikikin are only smeared with oil after they're baked.
Well, smeared
with oil after they're baked doesn't make them matzah shira. There's a chalos, according to that, but you're matzah shira.
After the bake, it doesn't make sense.
After the bake, no.
So extraction on Tesla, you could add oil up to the box of steak.
Well, I mean, we don't eat the brox anyway, so that's a different matter. But
not water.
Well, okay. I mean, in general, we're careful about all liquids, unless they've been thoroughly checked. But whatever. Okay. Anyway, I'm pretty sure it says in Shulchan Aruch that you would be allowed to, but I'm not sure about that though. So I don't know. That's bad. I have to look in Hilchos Pesach. All right. Mishnah says, if somebody says, I make a neder to bring a mincha in a machlas, lo yavi b'macheshes, so you can't change it and bring instead in a machleshes, which we're going to discuss soon, what the difference between a machlas and a machleshes is. But machleshes, lo yavi b'macheshes, and vice versa. Ma ben machlas lo machleshes, what's the actual difference between these two? Machleshes yesh lo kisri, machlas ein lo kisri, give Rabbi Yitzchak Levi. Rabbi Yitzchak Levi says there's no difference in the actual container itself, the actual cooking pot itself. No, one second. The difference is, Rabbi Yitzchak Levi is saying the sole difference is a machleshes has a cover and a machlas doesn't have a cover. But other than that, they're the same. That's Rabbi Yitzchak Levi. Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel Leimer, no. Machleshes amuka, the machleshes is a deep pot, Umaseh Ruchshin, or Rakin, and the mincha that's made in it is Ruchshin moves around. Or another gear says Rakin is soft. Machbas Sofa, whereas a machbas is a shallow pan, so therefore, Umaseh Koshin, and therefore the mincha that's made in it is hard. So Rashi understands that what we mean is like this. Because the Machesheth is deep, Therefore, the oil stays in one place. It doesn't spread out too much to the sides. Therefore, the mincha that's fried in that ends up being very soft because it was a deep fried, basically. As opposed to the machlas, it is not very deep. It's shallow. So therefore, the oil spreads more easily to the sides and gets more easily burned away, and therefore the mincha that's fried in that comes out harder. That's how Rashi learns. On the other hand, the Rambam understands differently. The Rambam understands that what it is this that we're saying, the difference between them is actually the consistency of the dough before it's put into the pan. Namely, the Rambam understands as follows. The machbas doesn't have a rim at all. It's basically just a flat piece of metal with a handle. So therefore, if you were to put soft dough on it, together with oil to fry it, so then the dough will go every which way, it'll slide off the ends of it. Therefore, to begin with, you have to make the dough hard, you have to knead it with less water or whatever, so that it'll stay in one place. Therefore, Master Kashin, according to the Rambam, no. It's just a flat piece of metal with a handle, yes. So therefore, according to Rashi, Master Kashin, in the case of a machlas, because the oil gets burnt away faster, and therefore it ends up becoming harder. According to the Rambam, it starts out harder because you don't want it to slide off the end. Whereas the Macheshet, because it has walls, therefore you can make the dough to begin with a looser consistency. No, not more. Well, you put in the same amount of oil regardless. No, the point is that you can put in more water. We learned before that menachos are made with water as well. So you can put in more water, make a softer dough in the first place because it's not going to slide out. There's no place for it to go.
It's not totally like it had to be. No edge, or which edge are deep or not shallow.
Well, the Pasuk just mentions machbas and machesha. So you have Rashi versus the Rambam and Rabbi Yitzchak Levi versus Rav Chanina ben Gamliel are arguing based on their Kabbalah or based on their understanding of the Sukkim and whatever of what exactly they look like. From the Torah, all we know is there is such a thing as a machbas and there is such a thing as a machesha. In fact, the Gemara is going to start off how we know this concept that a machbas is shallow and a macheshes is deep, or that one has a cover.
Okay,
not that I know of. And even if they did, how would they recognize? Not like it's going to be labeled on it, machbas or macheshes. But you have to realize also, in particular, we're talking about metal kalim over here. The kalim of the bismet, the clay shares of the bismet, were made out of metal. We learned earlier in the Masechta. We had Rabbi Yosi ben Yehuda, I think it was, saying that they can be made out of wood, but the halacha is not like that. The halacha is they can only be made out of metal. Anything metal from those days would have been taken by the goyim and then melted down when they conquered the Beit Mikdash. You wouldn't have any of them surviving the Pasha. And even if they did, they would have eventually rusted away or whatever. Yeah. All right. My time at Rabbi Yosi. Why is Rabbi Yosi saying that the difference is that the Machesheth has a cover and the Machbas doesn't?
Elim, are you going to argue like this, that what he's saying is, Rabbi Yossi might be arguing the reason why the Torah gives you two types of fried menachos that a person can bring is because he might be bringing them for two different kinds of things that he did wrong. Now, a mincha is not something per se that you bring for an aveira. A mincha is something that a person brings voluntarily, like an oilo or shlomo. Nevertheless, though, you could have that a person feels the need to bring it because of an aveira that they did, which there's no thick carbon that they have to bring for it, but they again. You could argue like this. You could argue that maybe the idea is a person should bring a minchas mar cheshet for a wrong thought in their heart, and the heart is covered, the thoughts of the heart are covered from other people, and we can use it with it, or Macheshet would have a cover, Kedichtiv Roch HaShlibi Javar Tov, as we find the same Shodesh in Tilim, in Kapitel Menhei, my heart is stirring with a good idea, so we see therefore that Macheshet can be related to something with the heart, and Umachvas Ta'afya Amachvoya Yacheh, and then you could argue that a Minchas Machvas is something that a person should be bringing for speaking out, like barking with their mouth, and the kedami inchi manbach nabuchi, like the expression that people use, he's barking. So the shurdish nabach, the basic two letters of it are beis and ches, which are the same as the ches and beis of machvach. So there, and speaking is something that's obvious. He speaks in front of other people. He speaks with chilus or lashon hara or what have you. So therefore, maybe that's where Rav Yossi really is getting the idea that a macheshet has a cover because for covered up hidden thought. And a machlas is uncovered because for uncovered, rechilus or lashon hara. The problem with that is, eima ipcha. On the other hand, you could also understand the shorosh in the other way around. Machlas da'afya amachvoye halev. You could argue that minchas machlas is brought for something that's hidden in the heart. Dichtiv lama nachbeisa lizrayach. As we find the same shorosh, ches beis, as where lovam says to Yaakov, why did you hide and run away? So therefore, machlas could be associated with hiding. Marcheshes the also aruchushi, and marcheshes could be a mincha that a person brings for something that he moved his lips. His lips quivered and moved. Kedah amri inchi, as the expression goes, have a merakshem tifvase, that his lips were moving. Sadra, but then machlas could be for something that's hidden in the heart, and marcheshes could be for something that's spoken at. So what makes Rabbi Yitzchak really say that dafka the marcheshes has a cover and the machlas doesn't? The answer is that was Gemara Gemini law. Okay, the answer is that Rabbi Yitzchak has the Kabbalah from his Rebbeim, that's how it is, that a Machvas doesn't have a cover and a Machveshet does. Not based on analyzing the words, just that's how they receive the Kabbalah from their Rebbeim.
Have you seen that the bake
usually eats
the moose with a thick layer of everything?
The more thick,
less thick, it has to really be a powerful oven.
Yes, yes, as
a patient.
Yeah, indeed.
The Machvas, I agree with, sounds very simple, it's go big
foot. Right.
But I think
they'll
just have
to
put something
that's
pretty thick.
Well, the fried ones aren't necessarily that thick, but they're the koinim do the name. The koinim are no higher
shape. The fire oven has to be that strong.
Yeah.
Because the koinim get it ready, but once it goes inside,
indeed.
It's up to the oven.
Mm-hmm. Oilah, indeed, and oilah can be brought for bitul aseh, or loisaseh, and nitik laeseh, or for bad thoughts. Right, but I guess the Gemara might be taking the view over here that maybe sometimes a person could bring an oilah for a bad thought, and then if they don't have for a machshava zara or whatever, and then if they can't afford an oilah, then they bring a mincha.
Can you have a mincha that
would be a mincha choyseh. That would be for the korban oilah v'yoreh, when you have the certain aveiros, shumas mitzvah shakadsha, shavuot bitri, or whatever, where you have that a rich person brings a sheep, and a poor person brings two birds, and the poorest person brings a mincha. But ordinarily, a mincha would be a voluntary korban. Then we said Rav Chanina ben Gamliel in Machula. We said Rav Chanina ben Gamliel learns that the machvas is shallow, or according to the Rambam, has no rim at all, and the macheshet is deep. So, how does he get that? Macheshet amuka. How does he know that the macheshet is a deep pan? Because the Pasuk mentions any mincha that's made in a macheshet, implying that there's an inside.
Therefore
it has to be deep. Machvas sofa, on the other hand, the machvas has to be something shallow or flat, according to the Rambam. Dichtiv al machvas, because the expression in the pasuk, in continuing in that pasuk, is a mincha that's made on a machvas, implying that's only on, but there's no inside. Has no text. Okay. Turn it on, we learn it a brighter. Beit Shammai omrim, ha omer harei alay marcheshet. Beit Shammai says that if somebody says, I obligate myself with a neder to bring a macheshes. They say you can't actually bring the korban. The money has to be left aside, or the money or the flour or whatever has to be left aside until Eliyahu comes and clarifies what the din would be, because the staskelahu e al shum kli nikru or al shum maaseihem, because they have a suffix. Is it that they're called minchas machmas and minchas macheshes respectively because of the type of pan they're fried in? Or are they called minchas machmas and minchas macheshes because of the, not because of the avera, but because, as Rashi learns, because of the consistency of it. Again, because they're soft or because they're hard. In other words, conceivably, after all, you could make a soft one in a machmas, you just have to be more careful about it, or a hard one in a macheshes. So therefore, so this shamai has a suffix, so like this. So if you say they're named based on the keli, then okay, it means he says a minchas marcheshes. So okay, he brings a mincha based in fried in a deep frying pan, fine. On the other hand, though, maybe what it is that maybe he didn't say the word I'm bringing a minchas marcheshes. He only said harei ala marcheshes. Maybe what he did is he promised to bring to the Beis Mikdash a marcheshes. He promises to bring to the Beis Mikdash a kli shoreis, a new keli, which is going to become one of the kli shoreis called a marcheshes. Without the actual mincha. No. The shamai is talking about while the Beis Mikdash is standing. The shamai lived while the Beis Mikdash is standing. No, it just means that. Yeah. So it could mean he was menadev a mincha. It could mean that he was menadev a keli. So therefore, Yehi Monachat Shiyav Eliyahu. Okay, Tosfos argues with Rashi a bit on that, Rashi also mentions the idea that, like we said before, what kind of avera is he bringing it for speaking badly or for thinking badly? So therefore, Rashi says that's also a consideration. Tosfos says that's not the consideration. It's just the question, does he mean to bring a keli or does he mean to bring a mincha? Machlokas and Matthias says, yeah, I mean, but this is in the Machlokas and Matthias. You see, this particular keli, is it called a machmas or is it called a macheshes? Or over here, when he said harela macheshes, what did he mean? Did he mean a keli? Did he mean a mincha? Did he mean a mincha that I'm going to bring because I had a bad thought, or a mincha that I'm going to bring because I spoke Lashon Hara? So therefore, the Shammai says, because then the question is that according to what Rabbi Yossi Agrili is saying before, that would affect the question. Are you bringing a mincha that's baked in a pan with a cover, or fried in a pan with or without a cover? The Shama might, the Shama is before Rabbi Yossi Agrili. They could be saying that they do hold that thing. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, Basilah says you don't have any such suffix. Keli hoyav a mikdash. No, there was an actual keli in the Bis Mikdash. Umacheshes Shema, the name of it was Macheshes, so it's clear that when he says Harei Ala Macheshes, he means a mincha that is fried in such a keli. The Joyma Kenig Kalbus Omrik, it looks like a deep kalbus. Now what are the kalbus? So Rashi translates it with a French word that means something like a pair of tongs or pliers or something. So in other words, it looked like this. It looked U-shaped. Now, so if you look in the diagram, and in your Gemara and Rashi, you have a diagram with a circle with a bunch of, you have a circle with a bunch of smaller circles in it. It seems based on Kitzvei Yad that actually there were supposed to be two diagrams in Rashi. Because also if you look in Shittim Ukubesis on the side, you'll see a different diagram. You'll see like a thing shaped like a letter Chet. But basically what it basically boils down to that there were supposed to have been two diagrams in Rashi, and they printed one of them in Rashi and the other one in Shittim Ukubesis. What it is a kalbus means something shaped like that, like a letter Chet or something. In other words, the pan itself has that shape. And then within that pan, you have little indentations in it, where the individual parts of the mincha, we learned before that most menachas have to be baked into ten loaves, so you'd have like 10 little indentations in there, sort of like a muffin pan or something. And therefore, so the idea is you'd pour the dough in there, and then it would go into those individual indentations all around the U-shape. So the first diagram that Shittim Ukubesis is showing the shape of the pan in general. And then the second diagram is showing the individual dents inside it into which
the shape and circumference is a cross section and in
no, not a cross section. The first one is if you look down at the pan, it would look like that. It would look like a U shape with a handle. You can see the diagram. It should look about this.
Yeah. So,
and then so you have Dolphin, the wall that sticks in over there, and then you have Aver. You have that the inside of that the what's inside the walls of the chest. So you would have, in other words, so you would have a container that would look sort of You'd have a container that looks sort of like that with a handle sticking out of it. Within that, you would have these indentations. In the different places, which is the diagram in Rashi, that the dough would go into. That's Kamin Kalbus Omek. It was like a deep kalbus, like a deep pair of tongs or something. So now when the dough is placed into that pan, it goes into the indentations over there. During the Kamin Kapuche Habarsim, the individual pancakes or whatever that get fried in there end up looking like apples from Barsi, which is the name of a place. The Rambam describes in connection with the menorah, you have a similar expression, and the Rambam explains that they're apples that had kind of an egg shape to them. But here also, I mean, they can come out with egg-shaped pieces of dough that get fried. They also look like the acorns from Greece.
Which is what?
What do they look? Also, think of the shape of an acorn from an oak tree. It also is like an egg shape, sort of. So that's the point. In other words, so they'd come out looking like that, like little muffins, let's say. So therefore, the Sibyl says when a person says I'm going to bring a marcheshes, clearly he means that he's going to bring a mitzvah that's fried in that kind of pan. So no stuffs about it, says the Sibyl. The owner, and also we see, says Bittel, I can bring a proof to that. The pasuk says, "V'chol nase b'mar cheshes al machlas." The pasuk that Rav Chanina ben Gamliel quoted before, that you have a mincha that's made in a marcheshes or on a machlas. Alma, so from that we see, Al-Shem HaKelem Niklu, so we see clearly from that, that the Minchas Machbas and Minchas Machesheth are so named after the keli that they're made in, that one is deep and one is shallow, v'loy al-shum ma'aseyim, not fundamentally based on the fact that one is hard and one is soft. It's true, they do come out hard and soft, or according to the Rambam, they have to be made hard and soft for practical reasons, but that's not the fundamental difference between them. So not like you, Beit Shammai, say that you have a sophic, no, there's no sophic in it.
The shape is what the name.
They're not the shape so much, but it comes out in that shape, but the shape of the pan, right, the shape of the pan, whether it's deep or whether it's shallow or flat or whatever it is. Okay. Then the Mishnah says...
So there's no suffix.
So according to the syllable, then, of course, the halacha, like the syllable, as it usually is, there's no suffix. The person says, harei alam ha-cheshes, it's clear that that's what he means.
Yeah, when Mishnah comes, what is all going to revert to Beit Shammai?
Okay, so then I guess at that point we'll also have Elio. So Elio can clarify what the person means when he says, all right.
Let him come.
Let's go on. Okay. The Mishnah says, now the previous Mishnah and the Gemara that we just had about it talked about the fried menachos. Now let's talk about the two types of baked menachos. So again, you have there's chalos and there's retikin, which either are thick versus thin, or kneaded with oil versus smeared with oil after they're baked. So the pasuk describes them that they have to be, the pasuk describes them minchas mafe tanu. The pasuk describes that they're baked in an oven. So if somebody says I'm obligating myself to bring a mincha that's baked in an oven, then it dafka has to be an oven. An oven. What? Tanner means dafka an oven, as opposed to, now an oven in those times, as you find throughout Shas, was something shaped basically like this, like an upside down cup with the top removed, so it was like a cone sort of, and you'd stick the dough to the side, you'd have a hole near the bottom that you'd put in the...
No, you
actually have your dias atas, taking the bread off without having it stick to the side and without having it fall down, is a skilled thing. The Gemara mentions in Shabbos and in some other places, the dias atas is chachma v'ein malacha. It's more of a skill than a malacha.
You need to do it carefully
so it doesn't fall down, and yeah. So.
But the question is, how do you stick it in the stadium when it was heavy and so thick?
So for that reason, typically,
they would heat the oven afterwards or before?
No, they would heat the oven before they put the dough in.
So but, how would it stay in the warm?
But they'd have to stick it on, but that's what Ellie is saying. But, okay, when we say thick, we're not necessarily talking about they would be thick like our present day challah, you know, we're talking about they'd be a tefach thick or something, you know.
Like a fluff of bread.
Yeah, basically, like a thick
so
piece.
The shadow on the wall was completely burnt.
Not necessarily, but yeah, it meant.
If you went to the right temperature,
yeah, you'd have to control it. You'd have to keep an eye on it. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so that's a tannu. So the point is, lo yavi mafe kufach. You're not allowed to instead bring a mincha that was based in a kufach. A kufach is more like a kufach is more like a stove. So therefore, it was a kufach was a squarish thing. Where you have, there's a big hole on the top, where normally that hole is where you put the pot that you're cooking. But you could also conceivably use it for baking. So again, you put firewood and whatever on the bottom, and then you'd bake something on the top of it.
It's an oven?
So that's the thing. A tanner is an oven. A kupach is more like a stove.
Squarish.
And, yeah.
So there's a big hole.
There's a big hole on top where it says to put a pot on top, right. You'd have firewood, and you'd have fire. We put the pot on top of the hole.
You have four holes, we put the pot on top.
Right. So you can't bring a mincha that's baked in a kufach, because that's not the same as an oven. V'loy mafir often, you also can't bring one that was baked by putting it on hot tiles, or hot bricks or something, you have like ceramic tiles or whatever, you heat up underneath them, and you put the dough on top of that. And you're also not allowed to bring a mincha that was baked in a pot of the Arab, which is basically a large pot where also they would put a fire underneath it and they'd bake their bread inside that. Rashi just says Arabian means of that particular place of where the Arabs live. Yeah. So in Arabia, I guess, where else would Arabs live? So the point is, when the Torah says tanner, it means dafka tanner, not any of the above. Rabbi Yehuda, maybe mafik kupach. No, Rabbi Yehuda says he can bring one that was baked in a kupach, because a kupach is basically a type of oven. Okay, but it's similar enough to an oven. Rabbi Yehuda says they're both made out of earthenware. They both have the fire on the bottom and a hole on the top. So he considers them to be similar enough. But also we're going to see in the Gemara why he says it's not matter. Okay. Another din. If a person says, now a person could say, for example, that I'm going to bring a mincha of chalos or a mincha of rikikin. No question. Then you have to bring what he said. The question would be rather if he just says generically, I'm going to bring a baked mincha. Lo yavi mechta chalas or mechta rikikin. So he has his choice. He can bring them all chalas or all rikikin, but not half and half. Not half. We learned about it a few days ago. Yeah. Because it's before we had it in the Gemara. Now we have it in the Mishnah. The Mishnah comes before the Gemara, right? So we have it in the Gemara. Now we're mentioning it in the Mishnah because the Mishnah came first. Yeah.
Bringing flour, oil to business, and it gets the kohen make it.
Right, so they can't make it half chalas and half rikikin. That wouldn't work. They have to make it all. Of course, it says that's according to the Tanakhah. Reb Shimon Master. Reb Shimon says it's allowed with Peshur Korban Echad because basically all one Korban. Unlike the Machlas and the Macheshes, which the Torah deals with separately, here the Torah says generically, the Torah starts off. If you want to bring a mincha that's baked in an oven, then it can be chalas and rikikin. So therefore, Reb Shimon learns that the Torah is telling you they're fundamentally one type of mincha, and therefore you can bring half and half if you want. I mean, in general, we say that Dvarim should believe in and Dvarim, but here we said Mafe Tanur, without specifying what he wants, so Reb Shimon says it's okay to do some of one and some of the other. We say Vidri for our thoughts. Yeah, we said before in the Gemara that a person should be bringing. But okay, in general, we say as far as practical halacha, Dvarim should believe in and Dvarim. What a person thinks in their heart versus what they say, and what they say is what counts.
Okay. Ben
Adam Lachaveh. Yeah. Ben Adam Lachaveh also sometimes, yeah. Dorim, for example, yeah. Okay. Tanur Rabban. Masei Tanu, so we learned a bright, so that, well, again, when the Pasuk says that Mincha has to be baked in an oven, that means Dafka an oven, V'loi Masei Kupach, V'loi Masei Ra'ovim, Ra'ofim, V'loi Masei Yoris Ha'avim. On the other hand, we said in the Mishnah, Rabbi Huda says that it's allowed to bring it on a Kupach. Why? Because it says Tanu, Tanu, Shnei Pa'avim. Since the Pasuk twice mentions the word Tanu, you have in Parshas Vayikra when it first introduces the Menachos, if you bring a carbon Masei Tanu, then you have the, later on in Parshas Tzav when the Torah summarizes the various types of Mincha, it mentions any Mincha that's based in a Tanu. So the word Tanu, the second time Tanu, teaches us Lahaksha Masei Kupach. That comes to teach us that it's also kosher if it's based in a Kupach, because a Kupach is another type of oven. Reb Shimon says no. Tanu, Tanu, Shnei Pa'amim. No, it doesn't mean you can bring in a Kupach, because he learns, like the Chachamim, that you can't. It means, Echad Shetayach Yosin V'Tanu. One teaches us it must be baked in an oven, and not any other kind of thing. But Echad Shetayach Deshad V'Tanu. The other one is that when you're being Makdish, you have to have in mind, so Rashi says actually, Hekdeshad V'Tanu, that when they're baked in the oven is what's Makadish then. Because the oven of the oven that was in the Beis Mikdash was a Kli Shari, and therefore, so that would be what would be Mikdash.
They wouldn't be cutting
the Kodesh without the oven, because we discussed the other day, we had the question of whether the drying measures in the Beis Mikdash were Mikdash, so over here, even if they measured it with the Yisodan of the Beis Mikdash, it didn't necessarily become Kodesh, but when it goes into the oven, it becomes Kodesh. You have a few different other explanations what Reb Shimon means by that, by Hekdeshon L'Shem Tanur. Among the other explanations are that when you're setting aside this flour, you have to actually have in mind that you're setting it aside intending for it to be baked in an oven.
Part of the time
well, the other way, right? Enyu ribu yachar ribu yachar l'bayit, right. Right. So in other words, since it says Tanur twice, and the second one on the face of it should be only a Tanur, nothing else, but just the opposite. It means to be Marba, also a Kupach.
So how do you make the rule, either a Ribu Yachar Ribu or Mute Yachar Ribu Yachar?
Because here it's Ribu Yachar Ribu, both of them. Okay, so actually the Gius that we have in front of us in Rashi is Ribu Yachar Ribu, but Hagoy Tabach changes it to Miut Yachar Miut. Yes, a Tanur would mean only a Tanur on the face of it. So yeah, if you have twice the Tanur, then it would mean that it would be a Miut after a Miut, and that means to be Marbe. Yeah.
So what is it, Marbe?
So therefore, Rabbi Huda is saying it's Marbe or Kopa. Whereas Rav Shimon says it's not a second Ribui, because the second one teaches us that it becomes Kodesh in the oven, or you have to have in mind that you're going to bake it in the oven. Yeah. Okay. So the question is, me is for the Rav Shimon Haislara. Does Rav Shimon really hold of that concept, that the oven that is baked in makes it Kodesh? Vatnan, we learn later on in our Masechta, Rav Shimon Omer, La'olam has, the Mishnah discusses over there the question whether the Shtei Alechem and Lechem Afonim, did a Davka have to be based in the Azara or not? Omer, Rav Shimon Omer, La'olam have a Rogel Loimer, you should always be in the habit of saying, Shtei Alechem and Lechem Afonim, Kshedas Ba'azara, or Kshedas Ba'Beis Pagi, they're equally kosher whether they're baked in the Azara or whether they're baked in Beis Pagi. Beis Pagi is an area of Yerushalayim that's outside of the Mikdash.
Same thing with Tanur and
So the point is, Reb Shimon is clearly saying that it doesn't have to be baked in the Azara. It can be baked in Beis Pagi, which is outside the Azara. So therefore, now if you're going to tell me they have to be baked in an oven, which is a Klishare, they're going to become possible when they go out of the Azara. So obviously Reb Shimon does not hold that the Tanur is Mekadosh then. Obviously, he holds that they're only in Scottish later on, when they're placed on the Shulchan, when they're waved at the Kvasim, whatever.
And the answer is,
Amar Rava, Ema Shiyahei Hekdeshan Moshum Tanur. You're right, you have to change, not that Hekdeshan Matanur, that the Tanur makes them Kodesh, but rather, Lashem Tanur, this is what it is, sorry, I messed it up before. When he first designates the flour, he should say, I'm designated Almanaf, having in mind that I'm going to bake it in an oven. L'shum tanur. So not hekdeshan bat tanur, that they become kodesh when they're baked in the oven, because if Shimon tackle holds they don't, they become kodesh only at a later stage, because they could be baked outside the azara. Rather, when you're first makdish the flour, for minchas mafetan, or Reb Shimon would say, what it means is you actually have to have in mind that I intend to bake this flour in an oven as a mincha.
How do you say it?
That your l'shum means in the name of it. It's the same as l'shem. That's a different. Yeah, it's spelled the same way. But the shum does mean any. But no, shum is often used in the Gemara as the equivalent of shem. L'shum tanu means, okay, maybe, but that's how it is. That's how it is in Gemara. L'shum tanu means having in mind that it's going to be based in the earth.